You married a monster.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we talk with Rebecca Hensler, founder of Grief Beyond Belief. She's clever, she's thoughtful, and hopefully she's audible above the music in the other room.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Hi, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover. I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts, Molly Glover.
Hello.
And Tim Wick.
Hi, I'm Tim Wick.
And you might be able to hear some muffled sounds or audience applause, and that's because we're recording upstairs at the Phoenix Theater during Fearless Comedy Productions' 50-hour comedy marathon, Die Laughing.
It's the fifth one. It's nuts.
The comedy strikes back.
What you'll also hear, less garbled and muffled, is our guest this week from Grief Beyond Belief, Rebecca Hensler.
Hi.
Yay.
I'm excited to be here.
Yeah.
It's so weird hearing your voices in the same room with me instead of in my earbuds while I'm bicycling.
That is so flattering and weird for me too.
You bicycle while you're listening to us?
Yeah, that's the weirdest thing for me.
Always.
It is.
Always.
That's
is
awesome.
That, is that recreational or transportation or?
It's recreation and exercise.
So right on.
You really can't help but exercise when you're riding your bicycle.
It's true. It's the only way to make it go.
Yeah.
I mean, you could like lay it down and just perch on top of it.
Just lay on it like a piece of toast.
Right. You could buy one of those bicycles that has like an engine on it, which seems just
pointless. Yeah. A motorcycle?
I don't understand why those even exist.
Yeah. Rebecca, you're with Grief Beyond Belief, which we've talked about before on the podcast. But if people haven't heard those episodes or they were bicycling in traffic and maybe things got busy when we were talking about it, would you mind telling folks just a little bit about Grief Beyond Belief?
Sure. Grief Beyond Belief, really the story of Grief Beyond Belief starts with my son, who was born with a very severe birth defect. And is this awesome little baby, but he lived his whole life in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to talk about, right?
Yeah.
So, and he only lived for 90 days.
Oh.
And so we had this very precious time with him. My wife and I were in the hospital with him every day. My whole family came all the time to the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
We sang him songs. He loved early Pink Floyd. You know, he was this great
little
guy.
That's pretty much universal.
Right? Baby's got good taste, yeah.
And so after he died, I obviously was going through, some of the most intense grief you can.
Absolutely.
I discovered that there was this thing, online grief support, which was great because when you're like can't stop crying at 1 a.m, it's mm-hmm. really nice to be able to reach out to other people who've been through the same experience. The problem was that pretty much almost everyone else in the online grief support community I was in had faith beliefs. Some of them were like the constant, I saw a butterfly today and I know it was a sign from my son.
I knew it because he likes butterflies, so that's how he would have sent his sign. Yeah.
And, God, if you'd seen a bird, that would have been a sign too.
My mom does that with cardinals for her father every time. She's like, Poppy was visiting us today. I'm like, okay, I'm glad that makes you feel better. Like, that's...
And it clearly did make them feel better, but mm-hmm. it was really hard to interact with these people because they would ask, do you all think this was a sign? And there'd be 100 comments, yes, of course it's a sign, of course it's a sign. And it's like, it was very alienating. And then there were all the heaven people.
Yeah.
And you can't really say, no, it wasn't a sign, it's just a frickin' butterfly.
Right.
There's a lot of butterflies in the world. And you're guaranteed to see one.
And you're going to interpret anything as a sign if you're looking for one. Because
you're a dick if you say that to somebody. You're terrible.
And that's the thing. And you don't. And so it was alienating, but then that just sort of shut me down a little bit as part of that group.
Like, you don't get to grieve with these people because you can't share this delusion.
Yeah, it wasn't making me feel better. The things that made them feel better wasn't making me feel better. And then there was this day where this particular woman said that she was grieving her adult daughter, and she said, "Oh, I'm sure my daughter, who loved babies, is holding your baby in heaven and taking care of them until you get there." And I, all I could think was, lady, like, do you understand statistically? Like, do you, the infant mortality rate, the odds that it's my son that your daughter, even if this was all true.
Does she know that we're friends online? Like, wait, how is this? Are you, what the hell?
Do they have the internet in heaven?
It's like the Upside Down. They have, like, ghost internet, but it's the exact same thing. Like,
so they're bringing up this really important topic in terms of sort of the difference between grieving with faith and grieving without faith, which is that cognitive dissonance doesn't feel good. It's not a comfortable feeling. Mm. And those of us who are skeptical, all these ideas we're constantly thinking, even when I would sort of try and like daydream and comfort myself, my son, even if I did think, oh, my son's in heaven, well, would he grow up in heaven? Or do babies grow up or not grow up? If he's growing up in heaven, where is he going to go to school? And is it a charter school or a school? Where is he going to go to college?
Will you recognize him when you get to heaven? Because he's going to be all grown up and you only saw him as a baby.
Is everyone up there good, or is he going to grow up to be an asshole because I wasn't there to, like, properly, like, come on, like, it's
and
not
so
fair.
There you are, like, you...
He's like an orphan in heaven.
Jesus. The whole thing sort of falls apart.
Yeah, exactly.
Why even would you... if you try to comfort yourself that way.
Yeah. How can that be something that's best for those babies that died? Up there, like...
Well, it's all God's plan.
It's just in
that's
that.
That's what I hate more than
that. I hate more than anything else. Yeah. That God needed another angel, and they're in a better place because that to me is like, oh, so there's a better place than being with me. Right. Wow, fuck you. Like, you know what? Yeah. Fuck you.
Which is one of those interesting things, because among grieving parents, even believers are like, there is no better place for a child than with their parents.
Yeah.
So anyway. I started feeling like there needed to be something very similar, but for people who were grieving without faith beliefs. And I had some conversations with people, including Greta Christina, about it. And she said, you know, it's not just grieving parents. It's like any
widows
person who's grieving
sisters,
without faith. And part of me was like, F you, because I don't want to, like, start this huge thing. That's a big job. Like, I'm talking about this tiny thing, and all of a sudden I'm reading people's writing about the need for grief support for non-believers and realizing that there's not this small need, but a very large need.
Yeah.
And so... about a year and a half later, you know, after sort of a year and a half of thinking through the whole thing, I founded the Facebook page and then really did discover how huge the need was, because, you know, within a week there were 1,000 likes and people interacting. It was amazing because it was exactly what I had kind of aimed for. People really were reaching out to take care of each other and saying, I really needed this. Even the people who weren't in a moment of grief themselves were like, wow, I wish this had existed.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, the few people we've had on our podcast to talk about it, they've all said that was the main, that your page helped them, but also just knowing that there were other atheists and non-believers out there who needed to grieve and were trying to stumble their way through it. And, you know, we talked a lot about, you know, most of us atheists, we realize that because there's no afterlife, you treasure the now so much more, that to some degree, I think non-believers, I don't want to make it, it's not a competition, but grieve in a differently intense way.
Yeah.
Because you're grieving in a different way when you know that's it, and then you are when you actually have tricked yourself into believing that there's more. Yeah. And yeah,
it's I think I've always kind of liked the idea that one of the primary functions of religion is coping with the knowledge that you're alive and one day you won't be.
Yeah.
And just that is on its own is a pretty enormous thing to have to deal with. Like it weighs on a lot of people. And so if one of the primary functions of religion is dealing with death, mm-hmm. then all of a sudden when you're dealing with death without one of our oldest coping mechanisms mm-hmm. for humanity, religion, it's all those tools that are commonly associated by most people in society are just not there for us.
Yeah. I think that's a good point. People are kind of, if you have religious beliefs, if you grow up in a religion, you're kind of handed these coping mechanisms on a platter. Here they are. Here, you know, here's how you deal with death. Here's how we deal with sad things that happen. And so, one of the functions, I think, of having this community at Grief Beyond Belief is that people don't have to figure it out for themselves.
Yeah.
Because there are other people who are there who are like, you know what really helped me when I mm-hmm. was at that moment in my grief was, mm-hmm. you know, was this particular philosophy. Or
yeah.
it really made me feel so much better, you know, when we go out and raise money for such and such charity in honor of my husband. This makes me feel better. And, you know, maybe you should think about doing something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
So people really... Yeah, fill in that gap
yeah.
that's left.
It's one of the things you said too. I think is worth pointing out that knowing you're not alone. Like you were talking about how quickly you got the you know like 1,000 likes and that sort of thing. How quickly the community was built. Knowing nothing else can change except for the knowledge that you're not the only person going through this, and things can feel better. Just knowing you're not alone.
Yes.
Nothing really has changed, but it can make an enormous difference.
I think that's a good point. And grieving is a particular kind of... just a particular kind of crazy, right?
Oh,
like
yeah.
the intensity of grief, the things our brains do to protect us. Like almost everyone who has, you know, lost someone who is a big part of their life has had that experience in the weeks right after the death where they think they see that person.
Oh my God.
And then the person gets closer and they don't even look a little bit
yeah.
like that person. Mm-hmm. Well, your brain is doing that to protect you, right?
Yeah.
Last fall, I found out one of my closest friends died relatively suddenly.
Hmm.
And... you know, I had gone to see her in the hospital. I had come back, but she declined very, very quickly. And so I received the text message. I mean, this was
yeah.
a weird way to find out, right? But her son texted me, she's gone. And I literally had to hand my phone to the friend I was with and say, does that say what I think it says?
Yeah, yeah.
Because my brain was not able to accept it. Well, our brains do these things, and if you don't know that that's typical,
yeah. mm-hmm.
then you feel like you're losing it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so it really does help to connect with people who are having those same experiences just so they can say, like, no, you're not crazy because you'll, like, walk a half a mile in Target to get around the baby aisle.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, and so I think that state of mind is what, we've talked before, but mediums prey on is that you, when people have suffered such an enormous loss, those are the people who are going to seek out mediums who claim they can speak to the dead and can make those communications. And that trauma that your brain is experiencing, that is a big part of what their cold read preys upon
mm-hmm. yeah.
and makes you feel like, oh no, this person knows things that they couldn't have possibly known because you can't even remember all the clues you gave them. You're just yeah. not even conscious of all the things. Like, you're like, did I... did I say I lost a son? Did I just say baby? Like, what did I say? Yeah. I don't remember. And, well, and yeah.
That same pattern recognition where your brain fills in the gaps and you start to see the person that you've lost, even though you logically know they're gone, that type of pattern recognition is still firing away when a psychic or a medium is talking to you. You're looking for those things that fill in those gaps, and you're going to be more willing to buy into that because your brain is fragile in that way.
Hey, Tim, you lost your dad when you were really young.
I did. I was 19 when my dad died.
You were also in the festy woo circuit.
I was.
Did you get people trying to tell you they could talk to your dad or ask if you know?
No, I did not. I did not get any of that. In the festy woo circuit, it's the crystal stuff, and there's not a lot of mediums.
Okay.
I did go see like a palmist a year after my dad died.
Yeah.
But that was about the extent of anything that I sought out there. You know, I mean, I remember having, and it's been 30 years, I'll have really vivid dreams where it's like he wasn't dead. He had just, disappeared something, some weird, because, I'm a nerd, some weird spy thing or some weird magic
abducted
thing.
Abducted.
And he's back, and I'll wake up, and it will take me a minute to remember again that he's still gone, that he's not coming back, and that your brain just keeps going. And I remember also just in that, the first, few months, and he died, and he was in Vienna when he died, and it took 2 weeks to get his body back, so there was all this BS around trying, because you got to go through, his body had to go through probate in Vienna.
His body is like the property of Italy to some degree.
So you go through all of this, and there are days where, you haven't even had the funeral yet, and you're having a good day, and when you realize you're having a good day, you feel guilty because you should be feeling bad because your dad died.
And you should feel bad for the rest of your life every day.
Right, every day. Yep. You should feel bad about the fact that your dad's not there. And it is a difficult process. As we've discussed on the podcast, I never really bought the Christianity angle of life, even though I was raised Catholic, even though I let myself be confirmed. It always felt just fundamentally wrong to me. So all these conversations around it didn't work for me. Hmm. I wish there'd been something like Grief Beyond.
Because your mom was and still is pretty devoutly Catholic, and so would have been turning to the church for grief counseling and help. Yeah.
And she, and the church that worked for her, it worked for her to get through it, and I don't want to knock it.
Sure.
In itself. It was fascinating what people say to you. I was after the funeral and I was just bawling my eyes out. My grandfather was like, don't cry. He wouldn't want you to cry. I'm like, what? What the hell? How the fuck would you know?
Yeah.
He wasn't even your son.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was my mom's dad. How the hell did he know what my dad would want? I was like, it's like, I bet he would want me to cry. He'd want me to feel something for my father dying. Give me a freaking break.
Yeah.
But I never did want to go through that medium process.
Sure, that's good.
I actually kind of wanted, for a special Geeks Without God episode, I'd love to go to a medium and have him try to contact my dad. I would be very entertained by that.
I have moral and we paid for psychics.
Yeah.
But I have moral and ethical problems with supporting someone who's claiming to talk to the dead, even for entertainment or research purposes.
We did technically give our money to someone who does claim she can talk to the dead.
I know,
we just didn't pay her for it.
Her talking to the dead service cost more.
Well, and that was something I really noticed in that episode when you said that, because I think, people who make their living that way know that someone who is grieving, because it turns out one of the most sort of intense and common, almost universal emotions of grief is that yearning for the person. That's what's at the core of it, is I want them back. I want to see them. I want to be reunited with them. I want them not to be entirely gone. Like, that's the difference between non-believers and believers, is we know that they are entirely gone. And so, of course, someone's willing to pay more. And that's really sick to me.
That agreed. That we all were very upset.
Ask for more money because someone who is grieving is willing to pay more.
Yeah. It's exploitation, plain and simple.
I'm sure there are psychics who say, who feel like they're not doing something sleazy and think that they're providing comfort or
that it costs more because they're using more of their power and it's harder on them or something.
The cost more thing I feel like is pretty indefensible, but but when someone who does it, that even whether or not they believe in what they're doing or the service they're offering, I feel like there are probably people who feel like they're contributing or doing something positive. I disagree, obviously, but I can't rationalize.
Well, I also disagree that church provides a service to people, and I know that that's a split decision that a lot of non-believers who are like, oh, but church is harmless, and if people want to believe in religion, that's okay. I am decidedly anti-religion. I think religion is harmful more often than it does good, but that's just me.
Well, Rebecca, do you think there's a difference between the kind of how a church or an organized religion handles death and services and that type of spiritual comfort, and like what a medium or someone who's claiming to talk to the dead, like when it comes down to it, is there a huge difference?
I think that while what they're doing is different, I don't think that what churches do is always harmless, because I have been to funeral services where there was like 5 minutes of content about the amazing human being who had died and how her loss was just excruciatingly painful to the people around her, how, you know, people were feeling like she was gone too soon. Mm-hmm. And then there was this huge amount of content about Jesus.
Oh, we were just at a funeral.
I was about to say.
The three of us were just at a funeral for an amazing human being. And that's exactly what happened.
It was, oh my God. You got to the sermon. And his kids are all basically agnostic atheists.
And they're all under 30.
And the pastor just started going, well, you know, I know that you don't really have faith the way your dad did. And it's just like...
Or your mom, who also died. And so now it's a lot about your dead mom's memory.
And you're all orphans.
And now you're orphans, wandering the world alone. But if you had Jesus, he'd be with you.
So
but
that was exactly what this preacher was saying, was if you believe in Jesus and have faith, you do not have to grieve.
And you never die alone. You're always...
And so so I think there really is some very clear harm.
Agreed.
And that's aside from, you know, I mean, I've also seen seriously abusive situations. Before I founded Grief Beyond Belief, when I was in this parents' grief group online, the sort of proto-Grief Beyond Belief was my friendship with a man named Cliff Schrager, who was a former evangelical pastor.
Oh.
And two of his sons had died in a terrible, tragic car crash, teenage boys. And he went back sort of after that and started re-asking these questions that he'd been told all through his education. Don't ask questions. Don't ask questions. Mm-hmm. You know, just have faith. And he lost his faith. He became an atheist.
Sure.
And the things people would say to him. I mean, I saw people on Facebook literally saying, God took your sons so they would not have to witness their father's apostasy.
Jesus Christ.
Wow.
Like, who effing does that?
They're blaming him for his son's death.
Well, and you know who says that? The kind of people who genuinely believe that as long as they say they're sorry and ask for forgiveness, they will go to this magical, mythical place where all the good people go. That is my biggest problem with the heaven concept. Once it was after I watched Dead Man Walking, and that was the one, because knowing it was a true story, and that this guy that raped and murdered and killed these kids and everything, and it was like, oh, he accepts Jesus. Jesus, truthfully accepts Jesus and says he's sorry, so he gets to go to heaven too? Well, fuck heaven then. Like, I don't want to be in heaven with a bunch of people who could do these things.
You're like, what if that happened to Hitler before he killed himself?
What's the
right?
point of heaven, you know? Then? Like, yeah. For real. Like, if it means that, like, the uncle that molested the kid can be up there too because he's sorry, like, I just...
How's
like,
that heaven for that kid?
Exactly.
The kid's going to go to heaven and meet their child molester?
And,
like,
and then we're back to the whole cognitive dissonance.
And it falls apart. In the eyes of God. And I mean, if you talk to Christians, I've had this conversation with Christians.
Yeah.
And granted, this is the super kooky right-wing Christians. But if you talk to Christians and you're like, well, so you're saying they're equal, and they'll basically say, yes, because original sin.
Jesus wipes it away.
All sins are the worst. Since we are all sinners, whether you are a child molester or the child that was molested.
Or you stole fruit one time.
Yeah. In the end, you are evil. Yep. You are irredeemable in God's eyes without accepting Jesus Christ. That is the entire conceit of Christianity.
Sounds like a timeshare to me.
every person is equal in badness.
Yeah. Yep. That's
or
that's
goodness.
BS.
If you accept Jesus.
Wow.
The only thing I let myself believe is, not even believe, but just like comfort myself with is the idea of pet heaven. Just because I can't imagine there ever being a cat or a dog or a pet that deserves to not go to pet heaven, no matter how abused they, because any meanness in them was something someone taught them, right? So like, that's our fault. So like and that's the one thing where I can be like, when we lose a pet and be like, well, go play with other pets that we've lost. You know, you'll find them, I'm sure, because you guys have good senses of smell. You'll get in there. And it's just, that's one cognitive dissonance thing I can let myself feel is okay, or like
you don't really believe in it.
I don't really believe in it, but I'll let myself be comforted with it, where I wouldn't do that with heaven. Yeah. Like,
and I think I think a lot of people, I mean, also we do all kinds of things that are not rational, and they're not rational. I say goodnight to my son every night.
Yeah.
He doesn't hear me. He's dead.
It's for you.
It's for me. It's a ritual that makes me feel better.
I say no parties when I leave the house to the cats, but it's not because the cats are going to have parties. But at the same time, it's just this dumb thing that we do where we're like, bye, boys. We'll be home later. They don't know what later is. They have no idea what we're saying, but it feels good. And it's,
You do a lot of that with pets, actually, Molly.
Yeah.
You will say, like, oh, I have to go to the pet store and get cat treats because I promised the cats that I'd give them treats if they were good. And it's like, they don't know. They're cats. And like, yeah, I know, but I promised them.
I promised. I made a promise to a person who lives with us.
And one of the interesting things I did bringing up pets is that after I founded Grief Beyond Belief, people actually, like, there were people who said, let's start a pet sector. So there is pets, Grief Beyond Belief for people grieving pets.
That's actually really great.
There's all these separate groups that have started. There's also, you know, for various illnesses, for cancer, for I have multiple sclerosis. There's secular support online for all these different challenges and struggles people have.
And they can find it all by going to Grief Beyond Belief on Facebook?
So often people often come to us and ask us to for referrals for other things. But the interesting thing is now, if you go on Facebook and in the Facebook search box put cancer support atheist, you will find a group.
That's wonderful.
Like, it is very easy at this point to find secular support for various, you know, struggles.
That's really great to know.
It's kind of the best and worst thing about the internet is that anyone with any set of ideas can find common people and meet with them and talk with them. Unfortunately, that's for good ideas and bad ideas.
Yeah,
I think that that's a good point. And I know that I, you know, one of the things that people struggle with and do come to us all the time about is that they do want in-person support.
Yeah.
And so, and that was from the day we started. People were like, so do you have groups? I'm like, whoa, I just started a Facebook page.
Yeah.
Like, But people really want that. And so I've written this handbook, the Secular Grief Support Handbook. It's really short. It's 50 pages or so. But it's basically, if a community, like a atheist organization in anywhere in the country, wanted, you know, to start doing grief support there, it's kind of everything they need to
like
do
a
that.
Primer, like to, yeah.
Some basics about grief, some basics about facilitating a group, some activities, some discussion topics. It's kind of like whatever they need to start providing that.
How can somebody get that?
So right now, the easiest thing to do actually is go to the Facebook page for the Secular Grief Support Handbook and, you know, or just honestly email me at griefbeyondbelief@gmail.com.
Perfect.
It's pretty easy to
get. That's awesome.
That's great.
So a couple weeks ago, we read your answers to our five questions.
It's true.
Like right before we figured out that you were coming to town.
Yeah,
we could have
I think it was just before we started trying to figure that out. So you have five questions for us.
I do.
For our
exciting.
Five questions. That's exciting.
I love five questions.
I love five questions too.
Yay.
And at my middle school, because that's my paying job, is I'm a middle school counselor. I ask a question of the day every
that's
day
great.
As many kids as I can. So I just found some good like ones that got good answers.
Oh, so these awesome. Are middle schooler questions of the day.
They
nice.
That's
all right.
exciting.
They are.
I have a middle school.
I was
ace middle school. I'm into this.
I resisted the urge to ask you all if you'd eat a bug for $100.
Yes.
Yes.
What?
Yeah.
I've eaten a bug for free, for funny.
Do I get to pick the bug?
That's a good question.
Now I have to.
No. That was a bonus.
That was a
warm-up.
That was a bonus Patreon supporter question.
That was a warm-up.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've just moved into your dream house and look out the window. What do you see?
All right, I'll go first. I would like to see mountains. I've never lived in the mountains. And I have only ever seen mountains at a distance, really. And so I've always wanted to live, but ever since I was a kid, I've wanted to live in, I would say probably like the Rockies is more. I don't really want to live in like Tennessee. So not Smoky Mountains, but like Rocky Mountains or other Pacific Northwestern mountains.
Well, it goes
also
against,
goats. There's goats out there.
Yeah, of course. It goes against everything I believe about the preservation of natural spaces, but since this is a dream house, I will allow it. It would be Yosemite Falls. My dream house would be in Yosemite
just
Valley.
Just perched or under?
Right across from Yosemite Falls.
In the valley. You're up on the ridge?
No. You're down in the valley and you just look across the valley.
Okay, so you want to get down at the base of the waterfall.
You look across the valley. The valley's like a mile wide. You're on the other side.
Nice.
You look across. You can see Yosemite Falls every morning when you get up. I would drink a cup of coffee in that circumstance in spite of the fact that I hate coffee. Just because sitting there and looking out my window and drinking a cup of coffee and looking at Yosemite Falls every morning would be the perfect thing.
That's amazing.
But you should never do that because you shouldn't build a house there.
Right.
Yeah. I don't think you could. You could try.
It's really illegal.
Republicans
yeah.
are working on it.
Yeah.
I'd look out the window and I'd see a screened porch, like a Three Seasons porch, and beyond that, a small to medium sized yard. And then probably South Minneapolis.
Nice.
Like residential, but urban.
Nice.
The city doesn't matter as much. But
we can build fake mountains in our backyard for me. I won't know the difference. I've never lived in the mountains.
We'll just paint a mural on the garage.
It could be like Denver.
Yeah.
Because then one side of the house would have mountains and the other side of the house
I'm going to get two good reasons I'd like to live in Denver.
I don't understand, anyway.
I like omelets.
Yeah, you like omelets. What's question two?
Question two.
Okay, would you rather have a friend who always tells the truth, but is sometimes mean, or a friend who's always kind and nice, but sometimes lies?
A friend who's always tells the truth, but is always mean, or a friend who is...
mean.
But it's sometimes mean,
yeah.
Or always nice, but sometimes lies.
Do we know that they are always telling the truth or always telling a lie?
No, you kind of know
always
this
lying,
about
sometimes
them.
Lying.
Yeah, that,
you, just
that you can't trust that they're always going to be.
Okay.
I would prefer tells the truth, but is sometimes mean, because that's me, basically. So That's just kind of how, that's my personality. I always tell the truth, but I am sometimes mean. Not on purpose, but sometimes on purpose.
I feel like I probably have a lot of friends that are mostly nice and probably...
Always nice. Sometimes lie.
Yeah. I feel like that's a lot of people I know that I'm friends with already. So another one of them, I guess.
He's already got one of the first ones. He's got me.
I've got a source for hard truths on tap at home.
I don't know if it's fair to say I'm sometimes mean, though. I don't really think I'm... I mean, I guess I'm mean on stage for money. That's not really the same thing.
Well, to some people, being assertive and upfront and really honest is a little mean.
That's true. Tim?
I live in Minnesota. I'm surrounded by people who are always nice and sometimes lie. So I guess I'm going to, just because, it'd be different, I'd go always tell the truth and are sometimes mean.
All right.
Yeah.
I feel like I could take, right. Most of my, the friends I've had historically have tended, some of them have been very mean for a lot of times. So I think I can handle a little mean.
All right. Question number 3. Cake without frosting or frosting without cake?
Cake without frosting. 100% cake without frosting.
Because I'm a diabetic, when I have a cupcake, I always remove the lower half of the cupcake so I can enjoy more frosting.
Oh!
So it's going to have to be frosting without cake.
Oh!
I'm on board with Tim. Frosting without cake.
You guys are insane.
Because here's the thing. If someone offered me a piece of cake and I wanted to decline it, I would be satisfied with a spoonful of that cake's frosting.
That's crazy.
That'd be enough for me. I'd be like, no, that counts as having my cake.
If I'm at somebody's birthday party and they've got a sheet cake and I get a middle section, I'm pissed. Because I don't want the cake. I want the frosting.
All I ever want are middle sections, and I often will scrape the frosting off because I don't want it.
Give it to me. Yeah. I can put it on my middle section.
Cupcakes, I'll just peel it off if I have to. Yeah, I'm not a fan. Oh, exciting. We're learning things about each other because of Rebecca.
Question number 4. So most superhero movies and shows have some particular character tropes. Sidekick, someone who's sort of a watcher or, like the professor in the X-Men. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah.
The hero themselves, anti-heroes. So which are you?
Which superhero archetype?
Yeah.
It's
anti-hero, hero, sidekick, or guardian watcher kind of role.
I know what I am.
What are you?
I'd be someone's guy in a chair.
So guardian watcher.
The trope brought up in Spider-Man Homecoming. I'm your guy in the chair.
Yeah.
I'm really good at Google searches and maps and doing I strongly believe that Googler, someone who has good internet fat research skills, it's definitely a skill set that I have and I'm good at. Mm-hmm. And if someone else was off running around and doing the outdoor physical part and I was on a Bluetooth headset and looking up okay, no, cut the red wire, I could do that.
I am
awesome.
I have come to terms with the fact that I am straight Gryffindor. And therefore, I really think I'd probably be classified as the hero because I am a doer. And I like to be, if someone needs something, I jump up to get it. If an errand needs running, I do it. I'm do a lot of the chores just because it's just my nature. That's just, so I think I'd probably end up in that trope because I don't really fear danger as often as I probably should. It's probably how I'm going to die. Like a hero.
We're going to bring it back.
Yeah.
I am really torn, but I think there are certain hero traits in the sense that pretty much any time somebody says, hey, let's do something, I'm like, all right, let's do it.
Same.
But I think I'm probably more of the Professor X watcher type in that I'm very typically, if somebody's like, hey, I've got this idea, I'll be like, sweet, I will help you make that idea happen.
You're a director, and that's what that role is.
And so, I think I've got to go with Watcher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We make a good superhero team.
Yeah.
You guys have done it.
We got a hero, we got a guy in a chair.
It's the secret to the podcast, really. Yeah. That's the whole, you produce it.
Yep. There you go.
Because the tech.
The picture on the tech,
All right. Question number 5.
I'm the face.
Finally, question number 5. level grinding or cheat codes?
Cheat codes, 120%.
Level grinding. It's so satisfying, but I also like busy work, like stuffing envelopes.
I'm going to argue hybrid.
Oh.
In that I will play something until I'm just like, fuck it, I've had enough of this puzzle. And then I will go and look up how to solve it because I want to move
on. Okay, so that's different. Like, I don't know if that's what you're thinking of as cheat codes. Like, if I can't solve it, I will definitely go to IGN. Mm-hmm. I liberally use walkthroughs.
So here's my philosophy on this that has changed as I've grown up. And that's that I only get like X number of hours to play video games as a busy adult. I want to fit in as much video games as possible into that time period. Mm-hmm. So I don't always have time to grind things out. I'm playing this game right now, Into the Breach, which is the follow-up game from the people that made FTL. It's a super fun little puzzle strategy, kaiju, beat-em-up mm-hmm. strategy game. But you have to unlock a whole bunch of stuff. I totally cheated to be able to get all of the content in the game faster so that I could play the game I paid for on my terms,
yeah.
but not with the amount of time I have to dedicate to that game.
That's fair.
Yeah, and I mean, I think I like playing games in cheat mode, but I kind of like playing them outside, without the cheat yeah. mode first, and then going back and futzing with the cheat code. So.
Do you guys think you're the same in real life? Like, if there were cheat codes in level... Because there are cheat codes yeah. in level grinding in real life. Yeah. Are you the same?
I can't cheat. I really get too torn up about it. Like, that's one of the few things... I guess it really, like... Because I feel like I'm going to get caught. And usually cheating means you're cheating usually means that you're circumventing something that just requires hard work or intelligence. And to me, that I don't want to... I feel like I should be able to earn that. But, like, there are things that I definitely did not always, like, I circumvent the law plenty, but like for some reason it's cheating specific. Like, I would never cheat on my taxes. I would never like try to like put false information into a government record or something like that.
This is the type of question.
A fake ID. I would never use a fake ID.
That totally exposes you as a Gryffindor and me as a Slytherin.
Yeah.
Because if there is a shortcut or some way I can figure out with cleverness that there is a quicker, shorter path, and I can do less work to get to the same end result, I will do that.
Even if it means sacrificing the quality of the work, maybe?
Does it get the job done pretty much as well? If it's pretty much as well, but it's a, yeah. if it's yeah. pretty much as good, but it's like a tenth awesome. Of the amount of effort, I will probably
see. Overachiever me could never settle for just it being done. I want it to be done and be so good.
And once again, I think I probably fall somewhere in the middle of these two extremes, even though they're not extreme. But I mean, I think that I want to do things the right way, and yet there are some times where you need to just get something done. And I am willing to take the shortcut if the shortcut is the best option.
What if it's actually cheating, though? What if it's not just a shortcut, but it's like you're actually doing something deceitful or nefarious in a way to achieve your end?
There's some sort of an ethical...
There's an ethical component. Thing. Yeah, that's
if
to me.
Question is really,
if there's,
yeah,
an, ethical, if yeah. there's an ethical component, probably yeah. will not actually
okay.
do that
so,
thing.
Yeah. So, Tim, you have a great show idea that you want to... You've written and you want to direct, and it's going to be in the Fringe, but someone else's ball is just ahead of yours. If you could switch them so that your show got picked instead of theirs, and you were 100% certain you would never get caught or found out, and you're confident that your show is super good and you're going to, everyone that's going to be in it is going to be great and it needs to happen, and the other show is not that great, not that dependable, would you do it?
here's the problem with the scenario you laid out. I understand that if that show got in and mine didn't, I'm first on the wait list and I'll get in.
But in this hypothetical...
Pretend there's no wait list.
In this hypothetical situation, no, I would not do that.
Yeah, see, me neither.
I probably would.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
My success would be forever tainted by the fact that I cheated to me.
It would
because
really...
Maybe I get to do it next year because maybe I could produce it on my own because I don't need... I don't need that situation to make that show happen, there are other options.
Sure.
That might be the easiest option,
yeah.
But there are other options.
I would consider it depending on other circumstances.
This is a long 5 questions.
It is.
I think it's all right. Exciting.
Unless it was like Josh.
I feel like we could do a whole episode on the ethics of cheating and convenience.
Unless
like,
it was Josh Carson's show, because fuck that guy. he doesn't listen. It doesn't matter.
We need to find a guest who's an ethicist.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for your... That was the 5th question, right?
Yes.
Okay, thank God. All right. Thank you so much for your questions, Rebecca. That's awesome. And thank you for being our guest. You're here in Minnesota for a couple other things that they're going to happen before this episode goes up.
Yeah.
But you have a workshop with Minnesota Atheists?
Yeah, I'm speaking tomorrow to Minnesota Atheists, and then following that I'm actually doing a grief support workshop, because I like to do that after I do talks.
Yeah.
And you missed all of that already.
And you've missed all of that, but the most exciting thing and the thing that brought me here is I'm actually on Monday, for the first time, rather than speaking to atheists about grief, I'm speaking to hospice and palliative care specialists and grief support
professionals so good.
About how to serve our population.
Thank you so much.
So
old future me appreciates that.
Old future you.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm eventually in hospice, I hope that I don't have to say every day, I said no religion for a reason, like I did in the hospital, you know? Yeah.
Thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
And for making your group. It's great. Yeah. It's a lot of people need that.
Grief Beyond Belief on Facebook, right?
I'm glad it's there for them. Yeah, Grief Beyond Belief. And the handbook. What was the name one more time?
The Secular Grief Support Handbook.
Secular Grief Support Handbook. Awesome.
That's just out there and available.
Yeah.
Just out there.
You should get that. Hey, Rebecca is a Patreon supporter.
Yay,
so
thank
today,
you.
When we met her, we handed her her buttons and stickers, which Molly just mailed out to everyone else yesterday.
Yep.
So if you support us with a few bucks a month, we actually you'll get episodes early. If you throw us like $5 a month, once or twice a year, we'll give you buttons and stickers.
And we have a new supporter.
We do.
Kelsey Hage. Or Hag, I'm not sure. H-A-G-E, so I'm going to say Hage.
Who we just sent, she's at a level where she gets buttons and stickers, so that she got in on that just in time.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you to all our supporters, Becca included, obviously. We're Geeks Without God, and we'll have another episode out next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm sure he's in a better place.
Go fuck yourself.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks. Moral authority, we don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Need more Geeks Without God? Go to our website, read our blog posts, find us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God. Social media!
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
I like ethics.